Morning. Today's daf in Bechoros is Chav Gimel. We are on the very top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. We're at the two dots. We're starting with the words Esve, but Esve obviously presents a question. And so before we get asked the Gemara's question, where one Amor is challenging another. So let's go back. Let's take a step backwards towards where this discussion started with. It started with a statement made by Reish Lakish in the name of Yehuda Nisiya. You buy tzir, you buy fish brine from your local Amaretz dealer. And this fish brine was a mixture of fish brine and water. Now, the fish brine itself is the Gemara describes elsewhere, not here, but the Gemara elsewhere describes just simply Zeya. It's just some sort of discharge that comes out of the fish. It's not considered a mashke. It's not considered a liquid. It's not makabel tuma. And so, therefore, the fish brine by itself would be tahor. But he does mix it with water, and the water obviously is subject to tumah. So this fish brine, alkech tzir me'am ha'aretz meshika b'mayim v'tahor. So what you could do is you could do hashaka. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, the principle of hashaka is where you take water and you put the water in the mikvah. And if you remember going back to yesterday with the way I described it, it's in a cup. You don't just simply throw the water into the mikvah, because good luck recovering. You put the cup into the water and you allow just simple contact, communication between the water in the cup and the water of the mikvah. And that creates tahara. It only works for water. It doesn't work for any other food. It doesn't work for any other liquid. The way Rashi described it in yesterday's daf, this is like zriya. It's like replanting a seed that's tameh. You take a seed of tumah, of anything, sorry, and it's tameh, and you plant it into the ground, and it grows again. So when it grows again, it's a new product. It's a totally new entity. You're regrown, born again. So the same thing is true with the water. The water and the water that becomes tameh and the mikvah water. So hagam, it's the same idea. It is going to become Torah through this process of Ashaka. Now, this solution of fish brine and water. So was it the majority of fish brine? Was it the majority of water? Once you do Ashaka, it doesn't matter. Because if the majority of it was fish brine, so then you already had rov. You didn't need it. You didn't need to do the Ashaka. And as we saw in yesterday's daf, it's such an interesting idea. Meaning, if the water is the minority, the Ashaka did nothing for the water. Right? Even though the water made contact with the water, but okay, the hashaka. But you don't need it because the majority of it was fish brine. If on the other hand, the majority of it was water, great, you did hashaka. So in any event, you're going to be fine. Then the Gemara brought us to a machlokus between Reb Yirmiyah and I guess we'll say Reb Dimi or Abaye. Let's call Abaye. Okay, Reb Yirmiyah made the following qualification. So now after you've done Havshaka, so now you can assume that this little mixture of fish brine and water is totally good to go. It's tahor. And so you want to bring it out on the Shabbos table and have people dip their bread into it? It sounds delicious.
Good luck.
Okay. Sounds delicious. Okay. But if you take this little solution and you add it to your soup where it has a lot of water in it, obviously, so that's going to be a problem. Why? Because Rav Yirmiyah makes the argument, matzah minas mino v'ne'or. Because Reb Yirmiyah says that what's going to happen is that when the water hits the water, so the water now is going to make up the majority. Even though the water inside of it was a minority, and even though it was tamei, but nevertheless, what's going to happen is neyor, it's going to reawaken. Now, the soup water itself was not tamei. So really, according to Reb Yirmiyah, there are really two things happening. One is that now the water represents the majority, and two, that minority of water, when it mixes with the majority of the water, so now you'll have a transmission of the tumah from one water to the other, and the preponderance of tummy water. That is all according to the viewpoint of Rav Yirmiyah. Abaye says,
why is it preponderance of tummy water if the soup water itself is tahor?
Right, so the tummy water has to now make the tahor water tummy.
Even though
it's not the majority. Okay. All right, anyway, that's...
It's not a majority making it tummy.
I hear you, but this is Rav Yirmiyah's viewpoint. So, to which, when the subsequent Amoraim are discussing it, Rav Dimi and Abaye, so Rav Dimi was going over this halacha, and Abaye says, I don't understand, that doesn't make sense. If the water, the soup water itself was tameh, so then we could have a discussion of matzah minas mino, where two like items found one another. But if the water in the brine and the water in the soup, if the water in the brine is tameh, and the water in the soup is tahor, we're not going to say matzah minas mino. In other words, this is not two things finding one another that are alike in nature. They're not alike. And so therefore, it's not finding one another. And yes, as the Gemara pointed out, there is a Mishnah in Truma, which we went over yesterday. And the Mishnah in Truma has described a scenario in which basically we're talking about reawakening the dormant Tuma. But that's simply because the dormant Tuma was put together with other things that are Tameh. So if I take tumah, mix it together with tumah, so then we could talk about a reawakening, a neyur. But if we're just talking about where it is the minority of the water in the brine getting mixed together with other water, but that other water is tahor, then there really is nothing to talk about. That's the Baye's argument. And the Gemara concluded that this is just now a machlokas between, I guess we'll call it, between Reish Lakish and Abaye. Okay. That is all what we saw yesterday. And it brings us now to where we left off yesterday on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph at the two dots. And let's pick it up. Eis Feis. So the Gemara now challenges based on the Mishnah and Para. Now the Mishnah and Para, so let's start off with the basics. We know that the Para Duma is Mitaris Atmeim. It takes people who are Tami and makes them Tahor. But at the very same time, it's also Mitames Atahorim. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's a paradox, and that's exactly the point. That's paraduma. Paraduma is a paradox. So that means to say that if I have either the solution of paraduma, or even if I just have the ashes of the paraduma, so of the burnt red cow. So if I were to touch it, I become tummy. If I were to pick it up, I'd be tummy. Now the tuma that is communicated from the afer paraduma, it's only for one day. I'll tovel the mikvah, wait till Harav Shemesh, you're good. But still, it's an avatumah, it's a source of tumah. And it transmits tumah either through maga or masa, either through contact or through carrying. So over here, the Mishnah part describes the following scenario, Afer kasher, shenizar be'afer mikla. So let's say I have a mixture of ashes. A little bit of paraduma ashes gets mixed in with just regular ashes. And so now, what do we say in terms of whether or not you're going to become Tameh? Simple. Majority, like we learned yesterday. Hochenacha rov l'tameh. So we're going to follow the rov in terms of Tumah. So that means to say now that the only way you're going to become Tameh by touching this mixture is only if the majority of it is para aduma ashes. Fine. The Gemara says now if we learn the Mishnah together, let's think this through. V'i ruba efer miklohu l'metameh. I'm sorry. And if the majority of it is this, I'm sorry, this is just the end of the sentence. And if the majority of it is just regular ashes, so then you're not going to be tummy. Good. That is the Mishnah and Parah with a very simple explanation. The Gemara says, now when you think about it, you realize that we run into a bit of a problem. So in yesterday's daf, how do we view the minority? It's dormant, but it's there. In other words, the tumah, when it becomes batal, it does not mean that the tumah is nullified. It just simply means that it's not going to be metame. It's dormant. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so now this Mishnah in Para really bothers me. Why? Nihi de memagala metame. So let's say like this. So I'm touching this little ash pile over here, where the majority of it was regular ashes, non-tame ashes. And a little bit inside of it is mixed in with paraduma ashes. Fine. But I can make the argument, the halachic argument, that when I touch it, so I'm touching the majority, not the minority. Because that's what halacha allows us to say. That most probably you touched the one that is more there. Fine. So that's in terms of maga. And I understand now the Mishnah para vis-a-vis maga. However, latame b'masa. Oh. But when I carry it, so what are you telling me now? That the minority is there, it's dormant. Okay, but it's there. So when I pick up the bowl and picked up all those ashes, it's inescapable conclusion is I picked up the para aduma ashes. And so therefore, I should become tummy through masa. That's a strong question. Wait one second. Let me start off with the Gemara's attempted answer. Ha itmar alam Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina tar melatame b'magav, metame b'masa. So the Gemara's answer, just take the question and flip it into the answer. Mm-hmm. You are right. When I touch it, and the majority of it is Afer Mikla, not Afer Paro, you're Tahor. When I pick it up and carry it, I'm Tame. Okay, that is Q&A, number one. There are going to be three rounds. Yes?
So they're both ashes, correct?
Yes.
So why don't we say Min, the Mino Enobato, it's always going to be Tame.
So they're not the same Min, meaning they're physically ashes, but one is Paraduma ashes and the other is regular ashes. When talking about like items versus dissimilar items, we not only have to look at the physical properties, but we also have to look at the halachic properties as well. Okay, and on top of that, the min b'mino no batos, that's a shita of Rabbi Yehuda. We don't necessarily follow that shita. There's Rashi that says that we do follow that shita. Okay, but my first response probably is the better one. Okay, v'hamar of chista. So Question number one now is in the books. Question number two. Round two of this of a similar discussion. A nevela betela b'shchuta. Now, in our Girsa in the Gemara, we have the words betela. Okay, in other Girsaos, it goes a little bit differently, but okay, let's just, as it's presented now in our Gemara. So, nevela betela b'shchuta sheyeshol nevela sheteas b'shchuta. Okay. That if I have, let's say, a little bit of nevela meat mixed in with shchuta meat. Now, when we're having this discussion over here, we're having it in terms of iser, achila. But over here, in our context of our Gemara, we're not discussing it so much as achila, we're discussing it in terms of tumma. Okay? Nevela, of course, on shechted meat now is a source of tumma, it's an avatama, and it will communicate tumma in one of two ways, magamasa, other contact or carrying. Shchuta, obviously, shechted meat, is not a source of tumma. In fact, the reason why it's not tumma is because you shechted it. So when I have these two meats and they get mixed one into another, so the Mishnah tells us, Mishnah Braisa, so nevela betela b'shchuta, it's going to become batel. She'i efshal nevela she'te'ase shchuta, because it's impossible for nevela to become shechted meat. In other words, they're dissimilar items. Now, here, there is a lengthier discussion in terms of the correct girsa of the Gemara. The way I read it is the way Rashi had it. Rashi does not love this reading of the Gemara. You see Rashi for a very short discussion in terms of what his preferred girsa is. Again, I'm going to just streamline the whole discussion because it's a daf. I'm going to keep it simple. And we're going to just get to the basic point of the Gemara.
Nihid b'maga. His answer that here you can see it's not min b'mina because halachically.
Yes, correct. It's not. Correct, correct. Same basic idea. Nihid b'maga l'matame la, l'tame b'masa, I'm sorry, l'tame b'masa. But it really comes down to the same question. So once again, I now have minority dormant tumma in this mixture. Okay, fine. So I understand. So when I touch it, so the majority allows me to say that I touch the majority, and therefore the majority is tahor. That part I get. But in terms of when I pick up all three pieces. So even though it is a minority, but it's dormant, and meaning it's there, and so therefore it's an inescapable conclusion that I picked up tumma, and I should become tame. So Amar Lei, so the response to this is basically going to be the same response. Asim b'drav chista masnitzallah, anna b'drav b'chia masnitzallah. Good. You have one way in which you taught the Braisa, but I have a different version of how I taught the Braisa, and parenthetically, my version came from Rabbi Chia. So I'm comfortable in terms of where the source of my viewpoint is. Tani Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia taught basically the same Braisa, but here's how it ended. Nevela v'shchuta b'tela zubazu. Then nevela and shchuta become bata one and another. Ve'idmar Allah, amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, tarim alatame b'maga, ava metame b'masa. Rabbi Chia says, again, the question just becomes the answer. You're absolutely right. When I touch this mixture, and the nevela is but only the minority, so I'm not going to become tame. But when I pick it up, so it's the inescapable conclusion that I picked up tumma, and therefore you're going to become tame. So far, so good. We had two rounds of Q&A. The question basically turns into the answer. You're right. You're absolutely right. Tumma in its minority state is dormant, so it's there in a dormant state. And when are we going to see this dormancy, so to say, wake up? When I do masa, when I pick it up, because when I pick it up, for sure, I'm picking up the tumma. The how did not? The Gemara says, okay, all well and good, and now it finally brings us back to our Mishnah. So basically, what just happened now is that the last daf of Gemara, starting with Reish Lam Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, all basically set us up for this point, because now that we have established this idea of dormant tumma, where the tumma is only but the minority, and even though there is bittul. But nevertheless, it is still viewed as there and dormant. And we have the principles of matzah, minas, mino, v'ne'ur. So the Gemara says now we can go all the way back to our Mishnah. And the reason why the whole discussion is here. What did we learn yesterday in yesterday's Mishnah? So what we spoke about is the animal discharged a fetus. But it wasn't just a fetus. It was the Mishnah described it as a cake of blood. Okay? But it's basically, it's a discharge of numerous biological waste products. Included in that is, obviously, the miscarriage of a just-developing fetus, together with blood, together with whatever other wonderful biological juices are coming out as well. And so now, it's unidentifiable. But the chances are, it's a really good chance that the fetus is somewhere in there. What did we learn in yesterday's daf? What did we learn in the Mishnah? So the Mishnah told us that, Behem agasa sheshafa charara harizet tikaver p'tur min habechora. So the Mishnah said nothing vis-a-vis tumah tahara. The Mishnah just simply says, it's considered a birth, So all subsequent births of this animal is not going to be a bechor. And the Mishnah Torah says you have to bury it. Fine. And then when we started with the Gemara yesterday, we immediately opened up with the Braisa Rabbi Chiya. What did the Braisa Rabbi Chiya teach us? Eina mitame lo b'magav lo b'masa. It's not tame, neither mag or masa. Okay, and now, at this point in time, hopefully, you know exactly where we're going. Dinan Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Behema Gasa Sheshafach Hararos Dam Haris Etikav Erev Niftarah Min HaBechara. So first the Gemara quoted the Mishnah, like we just went over. Utani Rabbi Chiya eina mitame lo b'magav lo b'masa. And then it went over the statement to Rabbi Chiya, which we also just went over. And now the question, which at this point in time, hopefully you're following. Right. Okay, so when I touch this discharge, so I understand that the fetus is only a minority, not a majority. And again, that allows us to say that what I touch is the majority, not the minority, and therefore I'm not going to be tame b'maga. I got it. But if I were to pick this piece of discharge up, so again, the fetus is there, minority, in a dormant state, but it's there, and I'm carrying tuma. It's an inescapable conclusion that I'm carrying tuma. And shouldn't I be tame, and shouldn't I become tame? Now, you remember, now this is the third round of Q&A. In round one and round two, basically what we did is we took the question, we turned it into the answer. Here we know we're going to run into a brick wall. Because Rabbi Chiya said, it's eina matame, lo b'maga v'lo b'masa. It doesn't give off tumah, neither maga nor masa. So over here, Rabbi Chiya's braisa is now creating the problem, which we now know cannot be the solution. So ishtik. So at this point in time, stalemate. Right? Not checkmate, but stalemate. In other words, you're right. Now Dilma, so the Gemara says, okay. So if we're going to go the route we've gone through all of today's daf and yesterday's daf, so basically we're at an impasse. You're right. If tuma in its...
If I may stop you, what tuma you want to be matama here? Tuma smeis, right?
Nevela.
Oh, we're talking about a behemoth, not an isha, okay.
Okay. So, the Dilma, shani hacha da'avile tuma srucha. So the Gemara now is going to have to take us down another path. And and this new path the Gemara is going to take us down is the following. Putrefied food. When food gets to the point where it is putrefied, where it is decayed and decomposed, so it's not food, and it's not going to be a source of tumah. What the Gemara now is going to attempt to argue is as follows. This fetal matter that's in this discharge, so it's now tsrucha. It's decayed, it's decomposed, it's to the point where it's no longer food, and once it's no longer food, it's no longer going to be a source of tumah. This is the argument that the Gemara is about to make. Now, in order to appreciate this argument, so we have to know just a little bit more information. What do we have to know? We have to know the threshold of decomposition, of decay. At what point does a food now become no longer the status of a food in which it's going to give off tuma? Now, hopefully this sounds like a familiar topic because we discussed it at the end of Chulin, not the end. Right? Chulin is 142 blot. This is Ayin Aleph. Okay. At the midpoint of Masechta Chulin, so we discussed... Right. At the midpoint of Masechta Chulin, so we discussed this, and that is when does food... Now, at what point of its decay and decomposition is it no longer food? It's a machlokas amorayim. Right? Interesting that not till the amorayim is this issue debated. It's an issue on a din d'araisa, but okay. But nevertheless. So, and basically your thresholds are going to be like this. It's no longer edible for human consumption, or it's no longer edible for your dog. Now, for those of us who are owners of dogs, I'm not one of them. Okay, I held strong all these years, and I happen to love dogs also, which I know that makes me right. But for those of you who are dog owners, so you know that the dogs are obviously less discriminating than we are in terms of what they're going to eat. So, if it is we're talking about achilas adam, obviously that's a higher threshold. If we're talking about achilas kelev, so that obviously is an extraordinarily lower threshold, because the dog's pretty much going to eat anything. So, to which the Gemara says. So whatever your threshold is going to be, so that's going to play a role in this discussion. So hanicha, continuing now in the Gemara, on the bottom of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, hanicha labar parda damar tuma chamura ad leger, v'tuma kala ad lekelef. So halo chazi leger. So as far as bar pad is concerned, so here's your thresholds. So he makes a distinction between tuma chamura and tuma kala. We're going to go like Rashi over here. Tuma chamura is masa, is carrying. Why is it called a stricter tuma? Because by a sheretz, for example, so you only gives off tumas maga, only contact. So nevela, the carcass of an animal, added feature, right? A chumra. So tuma chamura is the masa, and the tuma kala in this context is maga. That's the way Rashi presents it, and that's how we're going to present it. Good. See Tosfos for an alternative reading. But anyway, so according to Bar Pada, if we're talking about tuma chamura, when is it going to be tame bim masa through carrying? As long as it is edible by humans. Once it's no longer edible by humans, so at that point in time, it's considered tsrucha. It's considered decayed and decomposed and no longer a source of tuma. For tuma kala, which is maga contact, there, it has to be decayed to the point where your dog is no longer going to eat it. That's the opinion of Bar Pada. So halacha is lagir. So the Gemara says, okay. So when I have this discharge coming out of an animal, and yes, it has fetal matter in it, but if you go over to your ger toshav, who's living in Israel with us, who has every right to live in Israel with us, and the Torah also tells us that we have to take care of him, and the Torah says that if we happen to have a nevela, so give it to the ger, right? So good. So according to Bar Pada, all this now works out wonderfully, because the ger is not going to appreciate when you give him this charara, this bloody discharge. He's not going to want to eat it. And so therefore now it's beyond the point of achilas ger toshav. And so therefore it's no longer going to be a source of tumas masa, through carrying. So that works out very good. Ella Rav Yochanan, however, the problem is for Rav Yochanan, as we are now in the top of the next Amud, achazu ala kelev. So Rav Yochanan says that both the threshold of decay and decomposition is where it no longer is edible for your dog. And the assumption the Gemara is making is that your dog would be more than happy to eat this discharge. It's disgusting, but it's disgusting for you and I. For the dog, it's fine. Since the dog is going to eat it, so therefore it did not lose the status of nevela, neither for maga nor for masa. So hachazya lekelev. So it's good for the dog. So kasha. So the Gemara says, you know what, you're right. So this answer, this new approach regarding this chareras dam, this discharge of blood, so this new approach, our first approach, which was yesterday's daf and half of today's daf, is bittul barov. But as we learned now, bittul barov is not it's a good approach, but it doesn't answer all of our issues, because the way we view tuma as a minority is that it's still there, it's dormant. So its dormancy should then allow it to become a source of tuma for masa. That was the question. We asked the question three times in today's daf. Two of the times we were able to sidestep the question. But the third time, however, meaning our mission here in Bechoros, we were unable to sidestep the question. So the first approach of Bittul Barov, it's a good approach, but we did arrive at a dead end. Our second approach of today is that, well, maybe the way to view this Chareras Dam is that it's decayed and decomposed to the point where it's no longer a source of Tumah. This also is a limited approach, because it only works according to the opinion of Bar Pada. It doesn't work according to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, Adkan. Not the end of the daf, but it's basically the end of the sugya. Gufa. The Gemara continues now. As long as we brought up the discussion between Bar Pada and Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara is just going to return back to it for just a couple of minutes to discuss their sources. Bar Pada amar tuma chamur ad lager, v'tuma kala ad lakelev, Rabbi Yochanan amar achazu v'achazu ad lakelev. Okay, so a restatement of their positions, and the Gemara now wants a little more understanding of where do these Amoraim derive their positions from. My time at the Bar Pada, so let's start off with the opinion of Bar Pada. What's behind a Bar Pada? Dichsiv, the pasuk says, lo sochlu, kol nevela lager. So the Torah says that you're not allowed to eat nevela, lo sochelu, and then lo sochelu kol nevela, lager, asher b'sharecha, so the ger that's with you, so you're going to give it to the ger toshav. Again, the ger toshav, you're, right, my analogy every time, the green-carded alien, or legal alien. So good. So he's not a Jew. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. Has the right to do so. He makes commitments in terms of not being over to Avodah Zarah. There is a discussion in the Rishonim if there's anything else that he has to uphold by. But anyway, give the nevela to the ger. That's the pasuk. Now, harui leger kruy nevela v'sheinu harui leger ina kruy nevela. And as far as Bar Pada is concerned, not only is the Torah telling us how to treat the ger toshav, but it's also making a very strict halachic point, which is the definition of nevela. Nevela is only when I could give it to the ger, but if it becomes decayed and decomposed to the point where my ger toshav is not going to appreciate when I hand him now this putrefied piece of meat, because it's no longer edible by standard human consumption, So then it's no longer a nevela. That's barpada. V'idach, lamut hecha de'isricha mik, I'm sorry, v'idach. And now, if that's the opinion of barpada, so then what's Rav Yochanan going to say in response? Lamut hecha de'isricha mikara. So Rav Yochanan says, no, you misunderstood. I agree that Torah is making a halachic point, in addition to basic treatment of the ger toshav. But what Rav Yochanan says to barpada, as far as the pasuk is concerned, that's not talking about where it once was edible and now becomes inedible, but rather the pasuk's talking about hisricha mikara, where it becomes inedible from the very beginning. Now, what does that mean, inedible from the very beginning? So the example that's given, the sricha mikara, is let's say, for example, the animal's leg broke while the animal was alive and never making any kind of real recovery. So the limb starts decomposing while it's still connected to the live animal, right? Gangrene. And now you shech the animal. Or the animal dies on its own. All right, let's not even talk about shechita. The animal dies on its own. This limb, from the time of death, was inedible. That's what the pasuk is coming to tell us is not going to be a source of tumah. This is what the Gemara describes as hisricha meikara. Becomes putrid from the very beginning. V'idach, now as far as Barpada is concerned, Barpada says, not only do I agree with you, Rav Yochanan, I didn't need a pasuk for that. Hisricha meikara, latsricha kra. Lema'ute, afra ba'amahu. I didn't need a pasuk for hisricha meikara. That leg that started decomposing before the animal even died, that's not even in the discussion of nevela, of tuma, of food. It is afra ba'ama. It's just dirt. It's not even a food. So I don't need a pasuk to tell me that that is going to be excluded from tumas nevela. Okay, fine. So a little bit of a fleshing out of the machlokas between Barpada and Rav Yochanan in terms of when, what are the thresholds of nevela losing the status of nevela. Okay, tanan. We go back to our Mishnah, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, okay, so a restatement of both the Mishnah and the Braisa. This is now today alone, the second time that we're already hearing this. So the Mishnah told us that when the animal discharges our cake of blood, so you bury it, and it's pater min habechorah, this animal is now considered that it's given birth to its first, even though it wasn't viable, obviously, but still. Now, v'tini Rabbi Chia, ina matam lo b'magav lo b'masa. And it's not going to be tummy neither with magor nor masa. Now Rav Yochanan himself says it's bitul berov. Okay, so far, just a recap of the Mishnah, the Braisa, Rav Yochanan's explanation. Why is the Gemara doing this right now? Meaning it's great, chazara. Why is the Gemara chazaring for us? Based because it's setting us up for the following question. Typically, the low is chaziklal. So the Gemara says, look, Rav Yochanan, you know what you just taught us? You argue with Barpada, that part's true. But you also taught us that something is srucha mi'ikara, so then it's not going to have nevela status at all. And we learned that, according to Rav Yochanan, we learned that from the Pasuk. So now, we're talking about an aborted developing fetus. The aborted developing fetus that's now in this cake, together with other biological fluids. So according to you, Rav Yochanan, why are we even having a discussion of bitul berov? Can't you just simply say more fundamentally that this fetus that obviously did not come to term, was miscarried, was never edible, and therefore never considered food, it falls under the category of srucha mi'ikara. It was putrid from its origination. And so why are we going down the path of bitul berov? It doesn't constitute the majority, it's only the minority. You don't have to say any of that. Just simply say, Tzrucha Mikara. And so why, Rav Yochanan, are you giving an answer of Bitul Berov when according to you, you don't even need that answer? You could just simply argue Tzrucha Mikara. So the Gemara's answer, very simple. Hanami is Chazim Mikara Gavime. So the Gemara's answer is very simple. Go back to what we learned back in Chulin. Yeshech the mother, the fetus is inside. So not only are we allowed to eat the mother, but the Shechita also serves as a Shechita for the developing fetus inside. So the fetus inside, before it was miscarried, before the mother aborted it, was in fact considered edible. Agav ime, together with its mother, in conjunction with its mother. And so, fine, so it's not srucha mikara. Okay. Tanan hasam. Okay, and to finish up this entire sugya, so the Gemara now takes us to a Mishnah in Machshirin. The Mishnah in Machshirin describes the following circumstance, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Amr Tzir Tar Shanafal Lesocho Mayim Kol Shuhu Tameh. The Mishnah Machshirin once again takes us back to our fish brine. Our fish brine that was prepared by an Am Haaretz, and that means that he put water in. Now again, the fish brine is impervious to Tumah, as we discussed yesterday, and now a second time even today. The fish brine is impervious to tuma, it's just zeya ba'alma, but it's mixed together with water. But right now, we're going to assume that the water is not the majority. Okay. We're going to assume right now, for just for the moment, that it's a 50-50 mixture. I know that's an assumption, but you'll see why I say that. So it's a 50-50 mixture, so the water is not the majority. Fine. And the nafal lesocha maim kol shehu. If now you're just going to add a little bit more water, so tummy. So now it's going to be tummy. Because when I add a little bit more water, so what did I do with the total water content of this mixture? I've now brought it up to the point of majority, it's the rov. And matzah minas mino v'neir. Now I know, going back to the end of yesterday's daf, and I reviewed in the beginning of this morning, so this point is a controversial point. Meaning Rabbi Yirmiyah and Reish Lakish are, Rabbi Yirmiyah and Abaye, okay, better stated, a Rabbi Yirmiyah and Abaye debate whether or not this is a case of matzah minas mino. But Rashi says, as far as we're concerned right now, you can learn the Mishnah either like Rabbi Yirmiyah or you can learn like Abaye. Meaning from Rabbi Yirmiyah's standpoint, even if the water that's introduced to it is not tummy water, but this is still matzah minas mino. And according to Abaye, you'll just simply say that the water was added was tummy water, meaning that the Ama Aretz was the one who touched the water that was added, and so therefore, according to Abaye, it's matzah minas mino. Okay, either way. Fine, so far so good. So we had our brine mixture, which was where the water was not the majority, and you add a little bit more water, and so now it's going to be tummy. That's the Mishnah Machshirin. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Abaravu, Zosamaris, Nechshadu, Ame Aretz, La'arev, Mechsa Bitzir. So the Gemara says, and this is where I got my assumption from, by virtue of the fact that when you just added a little bit of water, so that brings us to the point of majority, so what does that tell us? So it must tell us that, generally speaking, what is the ratios of brine to water? 50-50. Because otherwise, how else do you understand the Mishnah Machshirin? When the Mishnah says you just add a little bit more water, and that creates a problem, meaning because now the water is a majority. So it must mean that the beginning ratios were 50-50. V'lama li mechsa afilu batzer mimechsa. Nami. V'hani mashu havalei paga. Upaga lo bato. So the Gemara now asks a really specific and technical question. And that is, why don't we say the following? Let's say the mixture is not 50-50. Let's say the original mixture was 49-51. 49% fish brine, 51% water. Okay, it's a really technical question. And the Gemara says, but you could still learn the Mishnah Machshirin, because why? Because if I just add a little bit of water, getting me to 50% of each, so then that fish brine no longer is batel. Meaning it's not the majority, but it's also not the minority. And so over here, when you're assuming that it's 1-to-1 ratio, 50-50 ratio, you don't have to assume 50-50. It could be 49-51. So ema ad mechsa. So the Gemara's first answer is, okay, if that bothers you in the Mishnah Machshirin, so then just simply say ad mechsa, up to half. Meaning that if it's up to half fish brine, up to half water with a little extra fish brine, fine, that's how we'll learn it. And then when I add a little bit of extra water and I bring it to 50-50, so now the water is no longer the minority. Okay, you want to learn it like that? That's fine. Ibai, same of the Gemara says, or I can also suggest to you as follows. Tumas ama aretz de rabbanan. Look, the ama aretz touch and it's tame. Is that a dinda araisa? That's not a dinda araisa. In other words, just because a person is an ama aretz does not mean that he's metame. It's obviously a rabbinic concern. Because the ama aretz is positioned towards halacha is that he's lax, especially when it comes to tumah tahara. So we assume that he's in a state of tama, and so therefore anything he touches is going to be tame. But that's not a din d'araisa, that's just a din d'rabbanan. And tuma mashkin d'rabbanan. And also, on top of that, we can add that the fact that liquid becomes tame, that too is a din d'rabbanan, as we learned at the end of the first parak of Pesachim. So, beruba gazra rabbanan, bepaga paga, lo gazra ba rabbanan. So now that we're operating over here on tuma d'rabbanan, not tuma d'araisa, so we could just simply make a reasonable argument that tuma d'rabbanan only kicks in when it actually hits the majority. And if it's just 50-50, so then we could be makel, you're right, it's not the minority, but at the same time, it's not the majority. And yes, in other areas of halacha, in d'araisa areas of halacha, if it's not the minority, then it has to be considered. But over here, being that the tuma to begin with is only tuma d'rabbanan, so we could be makel until we get to rov. Okay, fine. Just some, right, that is a loose end to tie up based on everything that we learned and based on the Mishnah Machshir. Okay, yeah.
So Rabbi Yochanan's answer, why don't we say, he said shechita, right? You do shechita. Doesn't the animal take on the status, the fetal material take the status of preventing?
No, but the fetal material came out of the mother.
After Shechita or before Shechita?
No, in other words, she miscarried.
No.
No. The Mishnah, our Mishnah here in Becharos, is just talking about a birth. In other words, then she discharged this cake. This Charever is done. Okay, and I mean, we had so many other discussions and so many other contexts. But as far as our Mishnah is concerned, we're just talking about where it gave birth.
No, I'm saying the point of Meikola.
Okay. Let's start the next mission. Let's start the next sugya. So what you're doing now is you're, again, a purchase from a non-Jew. You purchase the mother, you purchase the offspring as well, and you see they have a relationship. In other words, the mother's nursing its young. Now, remember what we learned just a couple short days ago about lactation, and is lactation proof positive that she gave birth? But as Tosus himself pointed out back on Daf Chaf, that was where all evidence that you have, the only evidence you have is just lactation. Here we're talking about where it's actual relationship. You see the mother and its offspring, and it's nursing the offspring. But you weren't there for the birth. You just simply see now the relationship. Can you assume mother and its offspring? Can you assume that? So the Mishnah is basically going to say, yes, you can. So you don't have to worry that she is nursing somebody else's child, but this is not her own child. So you can safely assume that this is the child that she herself gave birth to, which now, of course, means next one's not going to be a bechor. So if, let's say, you go into your eder, you go into your flock, and what you discover is the mavkiros, The ones who have given birth are nursing, and she'eno mavkiros are, I'm sorry, she'eno mavkiros menikos. Ein choshen shema benashal zu ba lo etzel zu, o shema benashal zu ba lo etzel zu. You don't have to worry that they're just simply, the animals are all switched up. Meaning we can assume that it is a mother-offspring relationship, that the offspring goes to its mother to nurse. Okay. Fine. And that means then that for the mother who this is her first child, the nursing calf is going to be the bechor, and for the mother who is not the who has already given birth historically, so this offspring that it's nursing is not a bechor, and you can assume that the act of nursing is going to establish a relationship of mother and its offspring. Good. It's a simple point of the Mishnah, and Amar Rav Nachman and Mishmei Rav Hilchasa Bekule Pirkin Bar Mi Plukta. So the Gemara quotes in the name of, now we have in our Gemara the words Rav Nachman, yeah, okay, Mishmei Rav. The Gemara quotes the following in the name of Rav, and that is as follows, that in our entire Perek, so the Halacha follows like all recorded positions in our Perek, Bar Mi Plukta, except when there's a Machlokas. Now we already went through a couple of Mishnayos in our Perek. The first Mishnah in our parak, if you remember, is where you purchased a animal from a non-Jew, and it's within its first year, or it's right after its first year. Now, in that first Mishnah, if you remember, that was a machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. And then when we turned the page and we went on to the Brisa on Chaf Amud Beis, other Tanaim get into that mix as well. Rabbi Yeshua has not one but two opinions in the Brisa. Okay, that's impressive. Then we turned to the Mishnah on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, and the Mishnah that we've been working on for the last 2 days. And that Mishnah records the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov regarding the discharge of blood. This Mishnah that we're learning now is in the name of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel regarding when you see a mother nursing its young. So we could safely assume that it's young. And there are a couple more Mishnahs coming up in the Perek, which, God willing, we're going to see. We're going to see another Mishnah tomorrow. We're going to see a Mishnah on Sunday morning. Good. So a nice review of our Perek. Rav makes the following declaration. Anytime you have a Mishnah in our parak, and there's no debate in the Mishnah, that's how the halacha records. Now, normally, the halacha is like a stam Mishnah, although admittedly, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. But anyway, so, Bar Mi Plukta, Amar Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes says his often quoted line as it relates to Rav and statements of Rav. Now, mind you, just context, proper context, right? Rav Sheshes was a Talmud of Rav. Rav Sheshes normally agrees with Rav. And even though this line is recorded many times in the Gemara throughout Shas, but in the overall context, you understand that Rav Sheshis normally subscribes to most everything Rav says. But sometimes he doesn't. And when he doesn't, so he says it and he says it sharply. So I think Rav was taking a nap when he said over this halacha. Meaning, I don't think Rav was totally coherent when he said this point that in the third parak of Acharos, whenever you have a non-argumentative Mishnah, so the halacha follows like that position. So when Rav was making that statement, he was saying which he was describing which of the Mishnayos of our parak. Ahaya. Ilema Resha Miflig Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Akiva. So are we talking about the first Mishnah of our parak? That's the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel when you purchase an animal from a non-Jew within its first year of life. So obviously that Mishnah is off the table for discussion in terms of establishing what is the accepted halakha. Ela de Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov. So it's going on our Mishnah. I no longer mean our Mishnah because we're on the third Mishnah, but on Mishnah number two. The Mishnah of the discharge of Chareva's Dam, well there, you're right, there was no debate in that Mishnah. But you know who was the author of that Mishnah? Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov. Whenever Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov speaks, he doesn't speak that often, but whenever he does, it's Mishnah's Kav Venaki. It's clean, it's pure. There is never a question in terms of when Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov makes a statement, maybe the halacha doesn't follow that way. It does follow that way. Ela de Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Mishnah's Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Kav Venaki. So Ela de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe it's the Mishnah, our Mishnah of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So Miflag Pligi Bebraisa. So the Gemara says, well, that is not a statement that's not subject to a debate. We haven't seen it yet, but there's a Braisa that's going to debate. So Ela Ad Rabbi Yosi Ben Hamashulam. Well, maybe it's on an upcoming Mishnah, which we'll see Mir Sashem tomorrow. So Ha Amar Rav Chadazim Radamar Rav Hilchasak Rabbi Yosi Ben Hamashulam. Well, Rav made a separate statement that said that the halacha falls like Rabbi Yosi ben Meshulam. So he didn't need another statement, another memra, to tell us that the halacha falls like every undisputed point of the Mishnayos here, when he already made another statement regarding that Mishnah. Ela Ashar Bal Mum. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's on the next Mishnah coming up in the Perek. So Pligi Akavya ben Mahalal V'Rabanan. So the Gemara says, but that's also subject to a debate. So this statement of Rav, that in the third parak of Bechoros, when you have undisputed points in the Mishnah, so Halacha falls like that undisputed point, which Mishnah is he going on? And the Gemara just went through a tour, Rav Sheshis just went through a tour of all the Mishnayos, and it seems to be that Rav's statement is not going on any one of those Mishnayos.
Yeah, but what is the bright things they're saying that?
Okay. So
Rav is coming to Mishnah, but Rav Sheshis is bringing that.
Okay. Not only is that a very good observation. So the Gemara says La'olam Ad Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says that it's going on the Mishnah regarding Rav Shimon Gamliel, otherwise known as the Ar Mishnah. V'akamash Malan Debraisa Lo Plukta He. So and as far as the Braisa is concerned, the Braisa is not considered a Plukta, meaning it is not right. Rashi on the bottom of the Amud Lo Chashiva Plukta. It's not considered a Machlokas. So in other words, so as far as the Mishnayos are concerned, which obviously are more authoritative, they're Mishnayos. So there's no machlokas, and therefore Rav was commenting on our Mishnah over here, despite the fact that Rav knew that there was a dissenting viewpoint in a Braisa, but that's a Braisa, that's not the Mishnah. Good. So Rav was going on our Mishnah. Okay. We'll stop over here. We'll pause over here. Right, we'll go on to the next. We'll start the next point tomorrow. Okay, just as a quick recap. So our first half of today's daf was a continuing discussion in dormant tumah. When tumah is no longer the majority, but it's only the minority. So on one hand there's bittul, on the other hand the tumah is there, but just simply in a dormant state. It can be reawakened. Exactly how is it going to be reawakened is a machlokes between the Amoraim, Rav Yirmi and Abaye, but it can be reawakened if I introduce its own kind into the mixture. In addition to that, because the tumah is there in a dormant state, if I pick it up through masa, and it's the kind of tumah that's metame b'masa, so then I should become tame. And all that's true, and we said that in two different occasions. The problem, of course, with all this is our Mishnah here in Bechoros, we're talking about the Chareva's Dam and the comment of Rabbi Chiya, where Rabbi Chiya says that you're not going to be tame neither maga nor masa. And that comment of Rabbi Chiya is difficult to understand, and the Gemara ended off with an impasse. The other point that we discussed today is Tumas Srucha, when food becomes to the point where food is decayed to the point where it's no longer edible, so it's no longer going to be a source of tuma. Machlok is between Rav Yochanan and Bar Pada, exactly what is the point of decay where it's no longer going to be a source of tuma. And then the Gemara just finished up this discussion with the Mishnah Machshirin and how to understand the Mishnah Machshirin. And then we started the new Mishnah. The new Mishnah talks about the relationship between a nursing mother and its offspring. Even though you were not present for the birth, once you see a nursing relationship between the mother and the offspring, you can safely assume it's offspring. And so therefore, if you buy it by a non-Jew, you can assume that it's its child, and therefore subsequent births are not subject to Bechor. If you go into the pen and you see a whole bunch of mothers nursing their children, so you can safely assume that everyone's nursing their child, and so there was no mixture, and therefore, for the mother who you know that this is her firstborn, you also know that that child is the firstborn. That's the Bechor. And we don't assume any kind of switching around.